They step into the biggest shows with the biggest names. And sometimes they get written on or off in a moment's notice. It's time to find out all the dramatic details of what it's like to be a guest star. With your host, Pete Ferrero.
Let's go.
Well, this is awesome. Guest star. Guest star is my secondary podcast, Lindsay. I don't know where you've been in the world, but it's all about all the other things that you've done outside of 90210. But we're going to talk a little bit about 90210. I want to ask you first, how was New Year's, the holidays? It's always good to see you.
It's good to see you too. The holidays were okay. We, my oldest son, Hudson, he got the army.
Oh.
So it was a real bummer because, you know, we were like, we weren't planning to travel or anything, but, you know, it meant no grandma around and no family and stuff. So it was kind of a bummer. Strangely, though, nobody else got it. And we were kind of like, at a certain point, we're like, let's just, like, we can't lock him in his room. He's 10. So.
Right. He needs things.
So, yeah. Yeah. Enjoy Christmas. And, you know, we're vaccinated. So if we get it, hopefully it's okay. We didn't get it, but we ended up having a really sweet Christmas with just the four of us, our nuclear family, which never would have happened.
For sure. Isn't this in a way like back to basics, what it's all about, that kind of thing, right? In a way.
Yeah, it really was. We, you know, we always tend to sort of find a way to look on the bright side. So it was okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm good. I had a little bout of the COVID remix, the Omni.
I did.
I was fine. I really didn't have many symptoms. I almost didn't even know I had this thing. I am vaccinated, triple vaccinated. So obviously the vaccines were working and all of that stuff, but it was not fun for a few days.
Oh man, I'm so sorry.
It's okay. We're getting through. It's exciting though. I mean, talking about some of the stuff that you've done and we've talked about this before in other places, but you started acting at a very young age. Where did it all kind of start for you? Where does the acting bug hit you?
You know, it was a complete sort of weird mix of things that happened, I guess, for me, you know, because at that age, you know, most people, I even know because people think that my kids are cute and they ask if I'll get them into the business. And my answer is like, even though I had a really good experience, no, because the cliche is that the childhood sort of disappears and the parents become, you know, obsessed with their kids. And in some way, like the kids become like the breadwinner. For me, it really wasn't that. Nobody in my family was in the business. And I was in a ballet class, and the ballet class was held at a department store. And the woman that ran the department store was like, can you ask my mom if I would, you know, be a part of their catalog? You know, they're like, it's called Hinshaw. It was like a tiny department store in Arcadia, I think. And my mom was like, I guess, I mean, why not? So those pictures were taken, and then someone at the ballet class saw the pictures, and then I ended up in this giant campaign for Vivitar cameras that was in Time magazine, and it all just kept happening. So I think my mom and dad were like, this is so weird. But for me, I think I was a really, they say I was like a precocious kid, but I think that means like high strong, lots of energy, you know, thinks she's a grown up. And so it just, for me, like I loved playing make-believe. I loved how it felt when I got to be on the set and pretend to be a ballerina or pretend to, you know, be a part of another family. Like it was all a part of this sort of make-believe world that I had as a kid, you know, and I loved what I was doing. But basically to make a long story short, it was kind of like one job led to the next, to the next, to the next. And it just kept happening. It was sort of like this avalanche of opportunity.
That's amazing. At such a young age, you know, we've talked with Brian, and I don't even know if you can really understand what's happening at that time, probably as a kid, right? Like, I mean, you're just kind of in it at some point, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, I knew that what I was doing was going to be on television. You know, it was a lot, at that time, it was a lot of commercials for me. But each time I got to go do the commercial, it was something fun, like the Toys R Us commercial.
I was going to say the first thing I actually ever see you in without knowing, and now looking back on it, is this Toys R Us commercial. And there's like a bunch of you in it. There's a bunch of like kid actors that are in this thing. Do you remember making the Toys R Us commercial?
I remember it so well. I remember first we sang the jingle, which I loved because I loved singing and performing.
Sure.
And then I think we shot 3 or 4 commercials and they just ran all the time. So I remember people would be like, oh, I have a Toys R Us kid. But for me, it was just about being, you know, in that, I mean, can you imagine going to a set and being a part of this like massive toy world? And, you know, it was all just so playful and it was so much fun for a kid. And I think at a certain age, I mean, I must've been like 6 or 7 at the time, but at a certain age where school came into the picture, my parents were like, you can keep doing this, but you have to get an A on your test, or, you know, you have to make sure that you are at a certain grade point average. So it was a motivator for me. I never had any like massive heartbreaks that sort of crushed my spirit, except for probably I was given the job as the childlike empress in the Neverending Story movie.
Okay.
And that was like my book. That was like my favorite book. And so the fact that I could be the childlike empress was just a dream come true. And at the last minute, they cast another girl. And I don't exactly know why, but.
Or who, right?
I think I know her name. Her name's Tammy Blanchard. It's like burned in my brain. That's like my one.
you're like Jan Brady. Marsha. Yeah.
But you know, for me at that young age, it was sort of a thing where my parents were like, let's teach her resiliency because she already is pretty resilient. And the whole concept was one door closes and another one opens, you know, like I had this very deep sense of like what's meant to be is meant to be.
Totally.
And it's funny, like you read all these like self-help or like law of attraction books now. And that's kind of how I was. I was just like, of course it's coming.
You were doing the very thing that everybody is now talking about doing, right? You were ahead of the curve. Yeah. Well, that's a good way of looking at it. Otherwise, I think this business probably is a very hard one as an actor, especially as a kid, to get rejected off of some film that for casting now all these years later, there's a million and one reasons why something happens.
A million and one reasons, yeah. And back then I didn't have to know the reasons because I also really loved my school life and, you know, I was in ballet, so I loved dance. Like it was all a part of who I was as a young person. It wasn't my identity.
Were you in school, like in a public school, or were you in a private school? Like, so were people recognizing you from the various appearances you were making?
Yeah, I went to a private sort of lower elementary school. And at that time, I don't think anyone really knew what I was doing. But by around the time I was 7 or 8, you know, I was, especially back then, like commercials just ran and reran.
All the time. Yes.
All the time, right? So if I was in like a National McDonald's commercial or something for Toys R Us or Barbie or something, kids would see me and say something at school. And I think I remember sort of feeling like people thought it was cool, but it wasn't really talked about. It was just, you know, we sort of got on with it. But now that I really think about it, I think, you know, I remember like walking onto the playground after being away for a couple of weeks doing an episode of something, you know, some guest star on some show. And I walked up to my friend group and they walked away from me. On the playground. And then I walked up to them again and they all moved. You know, there was some sort of jealousy thing that happened at the time. And I remember being pretty, you know, girls can be so.
Of course. You know, it's interesting too, because nowadays probably you'd also be like an Instagram star as well. You know what I mean? Now with the way social media is, and that back then being an actor was not it wasn't necessarily a cool thing, you know, but nowadays if you were, they build it into their brand and everything else.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the idea of being on television was so, it was such a, like a strange abstract concept, you know. Even for us, we didn't really, like as a family, we didn't realize what that meant, you know.
Right.
And also at the time there were very few faces of color on television, particularly Asians, you know. So, and I was, you know, my mom's Korean and my dad's white guy. I think I had sort of like a watered down vaguely Asian, or you know, Asian look that just people just kept casting because it was enough to sort of color the tapestry of whatever commercial or or TV show was going on. But I also knew at a young age, unfortunately, that I wasn't getting the lead roles. I was always sort of cast as like the girl number one or the girl number two, or like, you know, and my parents never spoke to me about it. They just said, keep doing what you're doing. And I promise you someday, you know, the world will be yours. But that, looking back now, I think there's something in me that always felt like I wasn't as valuable as my white friends, you know?
I want to ask you about this too, because back in those days, I mean, you know, I watched The Hotel and it's great. I mean, your work as a little kid is just really awesome, but it was a sort of thing about how Asian actors were typecasted as, there's just a certain way they were presented on television back in those days. Looking back on that now, me and you have talked about are your memories as good as you remember them. What did you feel about some of the way you were casted back, or how Asians were cast, Asian Americans were casted on television back in those days?
You know, it's so crazy. It's so funny. My brother and I actually we sort of cornered the market in the late 80s, early 90s of these, like, it was like the same storyline on every show, Hotel or MacGyver or Airwolf or, you know, the movie of the week, about a GI that would go back to his family in America. And then somehow, like, oh my gosh, he's got a child that he fathered.
Right.
In, you know, in the war. And so my brother and I, we would corner the market. Like, we'd walk into these auditions and people would be like, Christ, kids are here. We should probably leave. Like, but it was strange, kept playing the same role, to be honest. I must have played the same role like two or three times, and my brother played it at least two or three times. That was the only role. That was the only like story of substance that they had to talk about. And it was so strange because I was a kid that was living in Southern California.
That's not your experience growing up at all.
Not at all. I mean, we skateboarded and we went to the beach and we did everything else that our, you know, white American friends were doing. But for some reason, because of the way that we looked or who our parents were, we were only allowed to tell that one story, or maybe
right.
a similar type of story. And I remember at a certain point, I think I got my first opportunity to have like a lead role was when I was 14, and I'd been in the business for 9 years or whatever it was. You know, it was on a soap opera to play an illegal immigrant, like the cook's daughter. And I remember thinking, I'm taking this role, like, no matter what,
yeah, you know,
it's about, I need an opportunity to just work as an actor because I love it so much, and someday it'll be different, you know. And honestly, it's really only happened in the last 2 or 3 years.
The difference, you mean?
Difference, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree with you. All right, let's talk about Hotel. Okay. This isn't, what's crazy is like, because, you know, a lot of people that are probably watching this podcast know you from 90210, but it's an Aaron Spelling, Hotel's an Aaron Spelling show. I mean, right. So you've worked with Aaron Spelling in a couple of different ways here, I'm learning. Do you even remember being on set of a show like Hotel, which is such a big show at the time?
I remember it vividly, actually. I think it was probably my first, like, real acting role. And I remember, I think I, you know, again, I was playing this character that was looking for her father coming from Asia. And I remember having those long days and of course being in set school, but like loving being in these scenes with these actors. And I remember having an emotional scene where I had to cry, and being, I surprised myself how emotional and connected I got in this world of like make-believe and telling the story with this other actor. And I remember thinking, I don't know why, but that felt so good and I want to do it again. You know, I think that's the first real moment that I, at that really young age, which is so crazy, that I realized I wanted to be an actor.
Well, it becomes more than just like commercials and whatnot. There's some real substance happening in that episode. And of course, then you'll be doing that again many years later on 90210 for Aaron Spelling. You do My Two Dads?
Yes, which was a huge, I mean, I was a fan of that show. You know, back then there wasn't a million different streaming and, you know, cable platforms and everything we have now. So there's just a few shows on TV. So most of the time when I got onto a show, I probably watched it. Yeah, so my two dads, what did I do? Was it a Christmas episode?
It was a Christmas episode. You're in the big Christmas episode. I think you're just online, waiting to see Santa Claus or something like that.
For sure. I don't think it's a big deal, but I remember wearing Christmas PJs or something and not really digging what I was wearing. I have strange memories about that show, but yeah.
Well, yeah. It's a weird show. Well, it's not weird, but I don't know where people are in the world, but it's an interesting show because they're not, I would think today, if there were my two dads, it was a gay couple, you know what right. I mean? But it's not that, it's just the judge ordered these two dads to take care of this daughter, which I still don't understand fully. I mean, as a kid, I totally got what was happening, but looking back on it, I was like, I don't understand this premise.
I don't understand
that. Why aren't they not gay? I don't understand, they should be gay. Yeah, you know, sure. Why not? They should be breaking the boundaries and the borderlines of television.
Not happen, though.
No way. No. All right. The Wonder Years. This is awesome. I mean, you're in one of my favorite episodes of The Wonder Years where Mr. Tyler tells you guys that you should walk out to protest the war.
Yeah.
And so do you remember doing The Wonder Years? I mean, I think you're still friendly with Fred Savage all these years later. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, The Wonder Years was and still is one of my favorite shows, I think, ever on network television. It was just such a special show. And the kids were doing a certain type of acting, a certain type of work that was different than like the Disney sort of, you know, bright, self-aware acting that kids were doing at the time. It was just cool. It was the cool show to be on. And I remember I'd auditioned for it time and time and time again, and I would never get the role, you know, which was really frustrating. And then they called me to be a part of this episode, and I didn't realize until I was there how special that episode was. You know, I remember being on set, and we had to learn that Tracks of Our Tears song, and we had to, you know, learn about what it was that we were walking out about, you know, and I to this day, I can remember like full days. I could remember the way that the lunchroom looked. I remember, you know, having a little crush on Fred Savage. And like, if he looked my way, I was just like thrilled. And I remember when it was over being quite sad, like I wanted to do more of those. Yeah.
I mean, it's really, really awesome. Huge show. And it's also a period piece too. So it's interesting. You know what I mean? Like to go into, a classroom and it feels like 1960 something in it. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And another strange thing that the casting director kept telling my mom at the time was like, we love Lindsay, but it's the '60s, you know, it's like a period piece as if half Asian kids or Asian kids didn't exist in the '60s. You know, but
right.
The way that it was framed back then was that, you know, they kind of didn't. We never saw.
No, not on television anyway.
Yeah.
But to me, that's even a more interesting story. But I mean, listen, like you said, The Wonder Years is an incredible show. I haven't seen the new Wonder Years yet, but I'm into looking at it and checking it out. Have you checked it out yet? What's that?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, we will. All right, let's talk. You're on All My Children. You start doing some soap opera stuff, yeah?
Yeah. I think around that time, like 13, 14, I had just done guest star stuff. You know, that was my thing. And I was good at it. And I never went longer than a couple of months without booking some job. And I was great at going from show to show. But this was my first chance to do something like on a regular, like as a regular role. So I packed up and moved to New York and, you know, did this show that was like 80 pages a day. And most of the time, like I'm doing kind of a similar scene that I did yesterday because I have to keep like telling the viewers what the storyline is. And it was really, really great training, but it was hard work. It was hard work for a kid, you know?
I was going to say as a kid, because I'm going to go to 90210 next. But as a kid, you know, coming into a new show as a guest star, it, just generally speaking, whether you're a kid or not, has got to be an interesting experience because you're there for what, like the week, 10 days, whatever it is. And you kind of have to learn the universe, right? You have to learn like, what's going on here? This person's okay to talk to. Don't go there, do this thing. What is that experience like as a kid doing that?
It's interesting, you know, like, There is no work environment that I can think of that has such a clear, spelled out hierarchy. Do you know what I mean? Like the number one on the call sheet as the starring, you know, role gets treated like the number one, and then the number two and the three and the four, and you know your place as an actor, and you know your place as the hair and makeup department, and you know your place as, you know, any important role on the crew. But as a kid, I could see that I was numbered 11, 12, 13, or 20 on every call sheet for so long. And I was tough, like I was resilient. I didn't really care that much, but of course it affected me. You know, of course I knew that was sort of my value, no matter how good of an actor I was, or, you know, whatever it was, that's how it was looking for me. So when I got on All My Children, there wasn't so much those numbers as just the character name, because everyone had, you know, a similar amount of airtime. And it made me feel like I was a part of a company of actors. It almost felt like a live show, because it was, we did tape it live. And I clicked into less feeling like I was visiting or having to mind my P's and Q's, or, you know, like I left that feeling behind. Feeling you have when you're a guest star, because when you're a guest star, you're literally the guest on someone else's set. This was the first time that I felt like I was a part, really part of a world. So it was great. It was great for me.
So 90210 comes. Well, you. I don't know. Frasier. I don't know. Frasier's 90210 is definitely first, right?
I finished All My Children and moved home, and I think I was about 17 or 18, and I got on 90210 at like 1920. So there might have been a couple years there where I did some guest stars and some other things.
All right, let's talk about 90210 though, because we're just talking about learning the lay of the land on a show as a guest star as a kid. I mean, the time that you walk into 90210, it's not a secret. I'm not saying anything, you know, out of school here, but it was the show was in a different place, right? I mean, some of the actors were already checked out. You know, they were done with this. I mean, I think Jason leaves the very next year that you get there. So, I mean, people were already moving out. And there's been a lot of talk about, and I don't know that this is necessarily your experience, but I know there's a lot of talk about how the girls could be on 90210 and all this stuff. But in the first period of time that you were there, before you got made a series regular, what was that experience of coming into such a huge show like for you?
Right. So, you know, I was a massive fan of that show, because you and I have talked about this before, but I was just a year younger than where the characters were, like in high school.
That's right.
So this show for us, for our generation, was the first time that we had a show about us, you know, about kids.
Yeah. I mean, and the things that, what I love about it so much is the things that were happening in my school. And I wasn't in West Beverly. I was in New Jersey, you know, but they were kind of happening in our lives at the time too. So it was definitely right on point for our generation.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I guess, you know, and also I'd auditioned for Spelling like a lot of times. And I think when this audition came around, you have to remember that I'd had this like lifetime of guest star work. And, you know, I probably had more television credits than anyone sitting in those rooms auditioning. And I had that confidence, but I also kind of knew, unfortunately, I only know this now looking back, but I kind of knew my places, like what my ethnicity was, and, you know, and so on and so forth. So I walked in, and I think it was just to play the secretary. They were replacing someone.
They were replacing the secretary at the beat, right?
Yeah. And at this point, you know, I'd done hundreds of hours of soaps. I'd had, you know, fame, because soap fans are like,
oh my God, but a whole other level. It's a whole other level.
Right, whole other level.
Yeah.
Session. So I had, you know, learned how to deal with people recognizing me, and, you know, and I always sort of took it with a grain of salt, with much credit to my family, but I had this big life. I lived in New York. I, you know, went to theater and did theater. And so I knew what I had to offer. And I kind of thought at that audition, like, they take me, great. If they don't, you know, whatever. And I remember I read the scene, which was far less than like what I was doing on the soap, you know, or, you know, in theater. And I walked out and they said, Lindsay, can you come back? And I turned around and went back in. I remember I was wearing flat Adidas tennis shoes and like a suit or something, like very,
right.
I don't know why.
You're going to be the secretary, of course.
But they asked how tall I was. And I remember thinking, I'm going to get this one. And I did.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I walked onto the set and, you know, fully prepared to sort of wig out and be like, oh my God, that's Jason Priestley, who was like my ultimate crush. But enough time had passed between my fan, you know, like my fangirl days to that moment that
working.
I was.
Yeah, like, and you were working too. So you, there is a level of, you know, sort of how to orchestrate your, you know, walk into a set and not fan out and whatnot.
I mean, countless sets at this point that I've walked onto and worked with amazing actors. And so I, you know, I could understand and know my place and yet like offer what I had to offer without being intimidated, you know?
Well, let me ask you this though. I mean, I'm sure that you, and I don't know how you're gonna answer this, but I'm sure you've heard or you've read stories of actors that have worked on 90210 that don't have the experience that you had with Jenny and Tori. I mean, they're so sweet. I mean, I love them so much here. But, you know, there are stories that have come out. Jessica Alba has said that she didn't have a great experience, and you were around that time period. I mean, what do you think that is because of? Do you think that it's just that day? It's a busy day. What is it? Why has she come on as a guest star and has something like that, a feeling like that?
I don't know. You know, I've thought a lot about this because I heard about the Jessica Alba thing, and I've, you know, I know her and she's incredibly sweet. And I, you know, I can only imagine, I should just say, like, you know, but so there's two things. One, my scenes were always with Jason and Ian in the beat, and then mostly Ian. And I think I wasn't taking away anyone's storyline. I wasn't, you know, professionally a threat. Okay. I think also the way I came on was sort of a slow burn, you know, like, I was supposed to just do a couple of episodes, and then they kept asking me to come back. And then ultimately the reason I was offered a series regular was the there was an episode of, where there was a high school reunion.
That's right.
They wrote me one scene where I get really hurt that Steve sort of embarrassed me at this reunion. And Randy Spelling saw that scene and told his dad, like, you got to get this girl on the show. And I don't think at that point they'd ever had a series regular that was anyone of color, except for maybe the guy that played Jesse, right?
Oh, Mark Damon Espinosa. Yeah, but I think he was a guest star pretty much through his whole run there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think, in saying that, I don't think that anyone was like, oh, who's the new girl on the show? Do you know what I mean? There was no threat. And I also wasn't like, I came on sort of like, I was doing comedies and I didn't really care that much about like being sexy or beautiful. Like I was an actor, you know, and like, was in, you know, I wasn't really a threat, I don't think, in any way. You know what I mean? So I kind of came in the back door. And then, you know, on top of all that, I think I just knew how to be a regular person. And my experience in the business and being on so many sets gave me the opportunity to sort of just read the room, you know.
And that's not to say that Jessica did not read the room or whatever. We don't know that. It's hard for anyone to
child actor as well. And Hilary Swank, who yeah. I think I didn't replace, but she sort of left right before I came, she was a child actor as well. Like I don't really know. I hear that part of the reason, like sometimes I talk to casting directors who cast me a bunch of stuff and they're like, we just cast you because, you know, you're cool to work with, you know. So right. I don't know what means, but I think it's just that I might be like sane and I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Well, so you do 3 years at 90210. It's really amazing stuff. We've talked about some of the specific episodes and all that, and that's always fun when we do that. But leaving 90210, we've talked about was when that series came to an end, that must have been a very difficult time. In your life. I mean, you know, you were leaving a big show that you had just grown into being a family with. It came to an end. I've always told you that I think that you gave the show more life in the last few years without Janet, I don't even know what I would be interested in. No offense, you know what I mean? But to the 90210 things in those few years, you just gave it a certain energy in life, and that comes from your work, obviously. What was it like though when that series came to an end?
I didn't even really realize how much it was going to affect me, to be honest, because I went straight from high school, where I was doing, you know, All My Children, which wasn't really like I didn't really have a real high school experience. You know, I didn't have a normal prom, or, you know, like I never went to college. I went straight from that. I got into a great college. I didn't go. I chose to be a part of, you know, the entertainment industry. And so 90210 for me was my college.
That's right. And what an interesting group of people to spend college with.
Starting on now, like, that is so strange, but it was. I became, not only did I get along all right and not have problems with the girls on the show, but I became good friends with them, you know, and the crew. And, you know, we would work not just your regular hours. At that time, they would do double up. So we'd do like double shows. But I was there all the time. It was my everything. So when it ended, I kind of understood how everyone was really ready for it to move on. I wasn't ready, you know.
In some ways, you were just getting started. Like, what are we going to do next year? You know.
Right. I mean, I guess I would say that, like, from the standpoint of like my acting, I'd played this role for 3 years, and I was excited to see what was coming next. But personally, I remember just feeling like really beat up and like hungover and sad for a couple of weeks after it was over. It was just, yeah, I think that's like actors always talk about what it's like when a big show ends, and it is so hard to tell you in words how impactful it is, you know, because it becomes your whole world.
Is there a feeling like I'm never going to work on something like this ever again? Does that kind of like happen, or what are some of the things that you're feeling in that time period?
You know, it's funny that you bring up Hotel, because that my mom, I was just telling her last night, oh, you know, you showed that picture of me on the, and she's like, oh my
yes.
God, I remember that. When that episode ended, I remember crying my eyes out, and my parents just got the giggles and laughed so hard, because I was so sad that I was never going to see the director or the actors.
Right.
So close to them, you know, and at a certain point, I realized that, you know damn well that each show ends, and that it ends. That like special
right.
in that group of people that you were with, that closeness, that particular era is over.
It's almost like the end of high school in some ways. We're all gonna stay in touch and be friends, and then that's it. But you get to do that multiple times for various different shows, right?
Yeah. And from an 8-year-old little girl in Hotel to the time that I finally got to 90210, I knew how to take it on the chin. But this was my first time that I really, like, it took the wind out of my sails for a minute. Now, that being said, my career picked up like gangbusters.
Right. So you don't, I mean, we've talked to Brian together, and, you know, he said that he thought doors were going to be open and they were not, but you didn't really actually have that. You went and started working pretty much immediately on what was it that you did right after that? I think was it maybe Jack and Jill, or?
Oh yeah, I went on this show, Jack and Jill, Mandy mm-hmm. and Jamie Presley and Sarah Paulson. And that was great. Again, I was supposed to do a couple of episodes, and they made me a regular to the end of the show when it got canceled.
CSI, then, you know, yeah. Becker.
Yeah, I had a really fun arc on Becker. I had like a little stint there where I played a lot of crazy women, like rage issues or like kind of insane.
Not really, you at all, by the way.
Not me at all, but it is so fun to play. And so I kind of, that was sort of my little wheelhouse for a minute there. I did an awesome pilot. This was a big heartbreak. It was called The Heart Department. And listen to this cast. It was Felicity Huffman, Tony Shalhoub, Emily Deschanel, Mark Feuerstein, John Larroquette, and me.
Oh my God.
And they didn't pick it up. It was written by the people who did Party of Five. It was a medical drama.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a minute there where there was like a lot of pilots and chances, and it was a busy time of life for sure.
But I mean, so would you say Lipstick Jungle is the next, like, when you're, oh my God, here we go again. You know what I mean?
The probably the next big sort of push, a really strange one, is I got this role playing a total weirdo on this show called Coupling. And it only,
yes,
it's only on for one season.
It's hard to find. I looked for the, it's very hard to find. Yeah.
I feel like NBC buried it deep. It was Friends just ended and they were looking for the next Friends, and this show Coupling was a British version of Friends, which is so weird, but anyway, I loved being on the show because it was a live audience in that time where sitcoms, multi-camera sitcoms, were kind of still really sexy and exciting, and I loved the role I played. I remember Jeff Zucker coming down from the booth being like, you're our star. Like you're the breakout. And I remember being in Times Square and seeing like giant billboards with like us. We were all covered in a sheet and the tagline was the show that everyone's talking about. And I turned to my friend who was on the show and I was like, this isn't good, is it? He's like, no, because no one's even seen the show, so how's anyone talking about it? You know, like,
well, that's so interesting though, because you're a positive person, but once you saw that, you were like, oh no.
Oh man, like there was just no way people were gonna be willing to like be force-fed the next Friend.
No, especially that. Right.
Mm-hmm. And it was extremely racy. And like at the time, it was all about sex and dating and it had really kind of raunchy sense of humor. And at the time, I think they realized they had to backpedal because the sponsors, the people, they were like, this is too much. And we were yanked off the air and that was it. But it was kind of the show that everybody wanted. And this particular role, this role of Jane, she was like the fun role. And yeah. The fact that I had the chops to do it, that I'd come from the soap and now I was doing this like pretty, you know, high level comedy, it changed my career for sure.
That's really awesome. And it's interesting too, because right, you come from 90210, which is such a huge show, and in Coupling, I mean, there, I'm sure there's a part of you that's like, hey, maybe the hype is real on this, and this is going to be, you know, this is going to be the next one, right? Yeah. So is it what's weirder, what, you know, what's I don't know, ending on 90210 or now this thing getting canceled after one season, after all the things it potentially could be?
You know, I'd say that neither one of them ever felt like, I think I because I'm always able to really read the situation, you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah, clearly.
So I knew I was coming onto a show that was sort of reaching its end. So it wasn't like the dream job that an actor would want. I knew I was coming on to sort of a ship that was like had been out to sea for some time.
Sure.
But happy for my opportunity, you know what I mean? And with Coupling, I knew that I got this great role that everyone wanted. And if it did work, I knew that my life would change. But I also knew that you couldn't have Friends twice.
That's that. Right. So you're going with both of those things as you went on with it. It can't, yeah. It gets, it's done after a season. You start going back into doing some really awesome guest stuff. NCIS, you do a How I Met Your Mother. You're Kathy and How I Met Your Mother. It's really, really funny. What was your experience like on How I Met Your Mother?
How I Met Your Mother. So I was already, I think I'd just done the pilot of Lipstick Jungle. And
yeah.
So there's a little bit of time before the show gets picked up and you start shooting. And they called, my manager called and said, there's this really funny role on How I Met Your Mother. Do you want to do it? And I hadn't seen the show. I'm like the only person who hadn't seen it. But I loved it. She was like a really, really fast talker. And I loved that challenge because that's super fun to do. And it was super, it was fun. I ended up actually connecting with Josh Radner and we ended up dating for a little over a year after.
Oh, wow. That. Yeah. So there you go. That happened. That came out of that. I'm curious, do you like doing the comedy stuff more, or do you like both in different ways? You know, where are you most comfortable, do you think?
I'm comfortable in both. The comedy, I think, and I'm only telling you what I've heard from like managers and agents and whatever, but there was a group of women that, this sounds really, I can't believe this is gonna come out of my mouth, but funny women are not usually cute women, is what it was then.
That's not your opinion. That's what agents had said at the time.
So ridiculous. But there was a group of girls who could play both leading ladies and be funny. And I really liked being in that.
Yes.
You know, that group, you know? And so for some reason, like, you just keep getting cast in the same sort of things, because people are like, you know, who'd be good is this one that we saw in that last comedy. You know what I mean? But I did get to a point where I thought, I don't want to be pigeonholed into just doing that one thing. And there's a certain self-awareness with comedy that you don't have those moments that I had when I was an 8-year-old little girl, or other moments, you know, where you click into this like emotional, you're like a vessel, you know what I mean? When you're doing certain dramas and being so into another character and another story, like doing that deep, deep work. And sometimes with comedy, you don't get a chance to do that. Like, it's a bit more, you have to play it truthfully, otherwise it's not funny. But it's not as exploratory, you know.
Right, like becoming Kathy on, you know, on How I Met Your Mother is not really going to. It's not, you know. I mean, it's. I don't know. It's yeah. She's a great character.
Anyone's life, you know. Yeah. It's so fun, though. I have to say, like, if I spent the rest of my career getting to play Kathy's, you know, and getting to do these fun things, I'd consider myself a really lucky person, you know.
Thankfully, her name wasn't Karen.
Thankfully, it could have been.
Totally. Kathy may have been a little bit of a Karen. We're learning. Okay, tell me about your experience with Lipstick Jungle.
Okay. So you're right. Like, Lipstick Jungle was probably the big change. And to this day, it's probably the thing, you know, when people recognize me from 90210, because people of our generation love that show.
Right. Sorry, I'll always know that.
Yeah. And I'm proud of that. But this show, for some reason, it had like a real, it was on for 2 seasons, but people that were fans were like uber fans. But for me, it was the first time. So you always hear the story, and it's so cliche, but I had pretty much kind of felt like I wanted to give up on acting just before I got Lipstick Jungle. I had so many pilots that didn't go. I had so many shows that were on the air that got canceled. I was just kind of like, I was 29, and I was sort of in this like weird existential crisis where I'd worked my whole life, and maybe I didn't want to like wait for other people to tell me when I could be creative and be happy and make money. You know, I was going through a divorce. I just was really ready to switch my life around. And this show, the script came across my desk, and I knew, again, I was like, here we go. They're looking for the heir apparent to Sex and the City. And I've been down this road before. Like, you can't remake or fill the hole of such an iconic show. But it was the woman who wrote Sex and the City. And there was something in the script that I knew, because these women were in their 40s and they were like in their career. And
right.
I was lost getting a divorce, you know, like 29. Like, I was not like these women in this script. But the character I was playing was a fashion designer, and she was an artist, and she was getting a lot of criticism, and she got really bad reviews. And the audition scene was a total breakdown. Like, this business is cruel. This business is so messed up. Like, you know, she had like a total venting moment. And I remember going into the audition, and the words were almost so true that I had this out of body experience. And I did like this weird fake cry, which was so bizarre. And I walked out of that room like, I just quit. I can't believe how badly I bombed that one. Like, I've just lost all energy for this thing that has always been my identity. And I was staying in an apartment, the Oakwood Apartments, because I was going through this divorce, and he was in the house, and for some reason I was at the Oakwood Apartments, and I had a mattress on the floor, and I remember just thinking, what happened? Like, what is my life? And the phone rings, and it's my manager, and she says, hi, Victory. And I was like, wow.
Wow.
I could not believe it. And she said, they want to cast you. There's just one thing you have to go in and read with Kim Raver and Brooke Shields. They're going to record it. And, you know, but this is yours. And I went in and we clicked, and I had a real acting moment with them. And the scene really clicked. And then it was off to the races. The next thing I know, I'm in New York City and going to do my fittings like in Bergdorf Goodman's with like rows of like Coach Her dresses and shoes. And I went from like the Oakwood Apartments to the dream, like the movie star dream, you know. And I got to lead a show. It was three women, and I shared one third of that responsibility. And I, again, was on every billboard and bus stop and in the taxi cab when you got in, and, you know, Vogue magazine and the whole thing. It was probably like the craziest. It blew up so fast. And then when it got canceled that year, it was because the show, at that time, people were doing a lot of TiVo and DVRing. It was just starting, and the networks didn't know how to like
calculate it all. Yeah.
They couldn't do it, and the show was really expensive. And they took everything off 10 o'clock, NBC, the 10 o'clock hour, and put Leno on at 10.
Yes, another thing that happened because of Jay Leno that year, right?
Yeah, so it went down probably before its time. It was a great show, and it was fun. And before its time as well, it was about, you know, women's empowerment and not looking for Mr. Big, but being Mr. Big. And, you know, I think it was just a little bit of bad timing, you know.
I want to go back to the period before, because I think people can identify with what you were talking about, maybe not being an actor, but this crisis or this business that you're in is very challenging with the audition process and the rejection process and not knowing where you stand in it, maybe at times, right? How did you, I mean, outside of this story about the show, how did you, Lipstick Jungle, how did you get through that period? That must have been a very challenging time to have come and worked on so many big shows, so many big sets. I can't even imagine what you were going through then.
How did I get through it? God, you know, I think I'd had enough peaks and valleys that I knew that when there is a valley, the next thing is the peak. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
It was looking like the peak wasn't coming anytime soon at that moment. And I think I did start to like creatively think about, you know, I wasn't going to be rigid and say that maybe my life was perhaps going to take a different path. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't going to shut the door, but I had to start thinking about things that might make me happy. I started songwriting. I wrote I learned how to play guitar. I wrote like 20 songs. And, you know, I at one point between, right before I got Lipstick Jungle, like I was on this show called Pepper Dennis with Rebecca Romaine.
Yeah.
And Gretchen and Aaron, who wrote my character on 90210, they offered it to me, which was so nice. I remember being like, I've done all this really great work. And my scenes at the time were literally going in and like powdering Rebecca Romaine's nose. Like at a certain point, I was like, why is it that I'm not giving the Rebecca Romaine chance? Like, what's happening? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do get it.
Now I look back and I think because the networks weren't willing to gamble on a person of color as to lead a show. It's crazy. That was like 2004.
I know.
You know?
It's only really recently that this is happening.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's really still, we're still need to push, you know, we're not fully full throttle in this, you know, so.
Getting there, but you know, to be honest, like I get on that show, that Pepper Dennis show, and I do what I always do. I take what I have and I make it as fun as I possibly can, both personally and professionally, you know, in my scenes on set. And I'm so grateful that I get to do and be an actor. And that's just me as a person. I think I always just see that like, what I'm given is meant to be in the timing that it's given to me. And if I spent time thinking, well, I could have that, or I deserve more, or whatever it is that could like take you down and make you feel sort of rotten inside, if I even went there a little bit, I not only wouldn't have survived it, but I wouldn't have kept going.
Well, people probably ask you this before, maybe, I don't know. What now with the perspective that you have on what happened in that time period, what advice would you give yourself?
You know, I'm actually really proud of my younger self. Like, to be honest, now I look back and I get emotional. I think, holy shit, like, how did you keep going, you know, but I didn't really realize what it was until like now when you look back, you're like, oh my God, it's so clear, you know, but at the time I didn't see it. And I would have, I guess the only thing I would have said would say to myself is work harder. Just work harder. You know what I mean? I think there were certain moments where I just realized, well, this is what I'm going to be allowed to do. You know, I wish I would have known that there was going to be an opportunity coming up, you know, around the bend. My dad used to always say, just wait. Just wait till you're 30. Just wait till you're 40.
Yeah.
Just wait.
I mean, you're still working. So, I mean, and it's great stuff. Two and a Half Men. Miley Cyrus is on your Two and a Half Men. You didn't know that.
I didn't know that. What?
Yeah, I haven't really watched much of that show, so I apologize. But I mean, she's in the other storyline. You're with Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, I'm with Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah. How did you like doing that?
You know, he, you know, being a young person growing up in this business, you're sort of friends with all the other people that are your same age. So when I was on 90210, all the kids from that 70s show, especially Danny Masterson, who was in my acting class, we were friends. So like we'd go to the upfronts in New York and hang out with them. So that was like my social circle.
Yeah.
So I knew him, but it was strange because by the time I'd done that show, I had met Curtis, my husband, and had a baby. I think I just had a baby. I was still pumping or breastfeeding or something. So I felt very not myself and very strange. Like from the last time I saw Ashton to when I was on the set, so much had changed, you know, both for him and
yes,
and for me. So I remember feeling a little like out of sorts. I remember being like, what am I doing here? This is so weird. But I knew it was sort of an iconic show, and I was happy to.
That was hilarious. You're very funny in it. Blackish, you want to talk to me about that?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Blackish is such a funny show. I was on the first season, and they were still kind of, you know, I think they knew that they were onto something really great. And that cast, to this day, it's probably the most fun I've had as a guest star on a show. They were so welcoming, so lovely. It was sort of a group setting. So we all got to hang out, you know, throughout the day when we were shooting. And I loved it. I loved being a part of that show.
Splitting Up Together pops up. This is another one of those big shows. Jenna Fischer's in it. She's really incredible. She had already done The Office and whatnot, so you're aware of her. Tell me about that show and that coming to be.
Splitting Up Together. I think at that time I really wanted a single camera comedy, because what happens is you get a chance to do that fun, intelligent, and it was also about a relationship, so I really like exploring relationships. So I really liked the script. I liked that it was a comedy, but without having the live audience, it feels a little more real.
You know, sure.
Mm-hmm. Set. So I was like, great. It's exactly what I want, because the hours are really good and I had two small kids. And it was shot in LA, so I didn't have to move everyone to Atlanta or whatever. It was a perfect job. Again, I know I'm harping on it a lot today, but for some reason I'm thinking about it. I was offered a test deal for Jenna's role.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course she's Jenna Fischer and she can lead a show because of The Office. So they offered, you know, the role to Jenna and then offered me the role of the friend, you know. So tiny part of me that was like, here I am again after all these years playing friends. But being on that show, Emily Kapnick is, I think her writing is so smart and funny, and I love what she does. And I got to work with the amazing Bobby Lee, who is the strangest, most lovely. Like, I love him so much. So to play his wife and have that dynamic, you know, it was a really good time.
And you got friendly with Jenna and all that stuff too. So that's great.
Amazing. And I loved working with her. She's one of those actors that there's no, like, course as a woman, like, you think about your hair and makeup a little bit, but for the most part she just is like the most real. She does the work. She's so professional, and she's become a good friend, and honestly at the end of the day, like, everything you've ever done, unless you're doing your show and like going through and watching all the stuff that I've ever done, nobody knows, nobody cares.
Yeah,
the best part along the way for me is the people I've met. the friendships I've made, and Jen is one of those people for sure.
Awesome. Lastly, you did Atypical very recently in COVID, I would imagine, right? What was that experience like?
So Atypical, they called and offered me this role, and I was like, I guess it's COVID. Like,
I don't know.
I don't know. But then I watched the show, and I loved the show.
It's great. Mm-hmm.
The first couple of seasons, my husband and I were just like, fuck, it's so sweet. And the actors are amazing, and the writing is incredible. So I said yes. And I had a long conversation with the creators of the show, and they wanted me to play this like total narcissist and this like alcoholic and like not a nice person. And I haven't played that. So I really wanted to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get your COVID test and like you do your swab, and it was strange because not only was it the first time back at work in so long, but it's the first time like out of my house in so long.
Right. Out of lockdown. Right.
Yeah. It was my first time also playing the mother of someone not a baby. The only other time I played a mother was on, I think, 90210, and that was baby.
Yeah.
This girl was supposed to be 16 or 17. So I was like, okay, I'm like entering that world now. But it also offers some really cool opportunities to play different women that I haven't played before when you reach that sort of category, you know? Unfortunately, like the first day I was on the set, they called and they had to shut the set down because the person that I was standing next to got a positive. So I was like, the second I step out into the world, like this is actually going to happen. God. This turned out to be a false positive. It was all okay.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank God. Jeez.
But they shut it down for 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever it was. It was crazy.
I can't even imagine what this is like. This is going to be like over the next few years. I think we're just going to have a lot of things like this. Right.
I think so.
What do you got come anything down the pike? Anything interesting?
You know, it's January 11th, which typically is sort of like pilot season. You know, back in the day it was like all the network shows start and you get like 5 scripts a day and whatever it is. I don't know if we have a normal pilot season anymore. I think things kind of cast.
Yeah, I think it's just like whenever they want to
yeah.
happen. Yeah.
Exactly. I've been in the last couple of years putting together and formulating sort of behind the scenes a little bit, writing and producing, and I'm working with an awesome production company to do a movie or limited series about my mom's life, which is awesome.
This is going to be amazing. Are you going to play your mom?
I can't, I don't think. First of all, she, you know, 100% Korean, and I really want to be authentic to that in the casting. But secondly, I just think that would just be way, way, way too much.
Yeah, you have to go to a very unique spot in your brain for all.
I'm just excited about, you know, telling a story like that's not stereotypical. It's like, boom, this is what's happening, the Asian American experience right now, and then telling it in retrospect for, you know, where she came from and what her story is. I might play a version of myself.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's very cool. Well, this has been great, Lindsay. I love hearing about everything that you've done and you're doing. I think the world of you, I think you're super talented, and it's always nice hanging out with you. So thanks for your time. This was awesome.
Thanks. We'll see you soon.
You know it.